Well, as I mentioned, it's been great thinking about how much I love my life in a very deliberate way, not in a default manner, but just deliberately so I could speak today. It's just been such a gift. And in March of last year, I had a job at AOL, and I was living in a house in Sterling that I dearly loved. We were renting it, and it was on a cul-de-sac, and it was a little small, but it was great. I loved it. It wasn't ideal, but it was enjoyable. We lived there for 3 years, and I had a job at AOL that was poetic justice. I had been laid off from there in 99, and I was able to come back as a contractor to the exact same department, and it felt great. It felt like healing. It wasn't ideal, but it was okay. And then in April, all of that was changed. The contract ended, and the person who owned the home we were living in decided to sell it, and I found myself in the position of having to find a job and a home all at the same time. And I went into a deep depression, actually. So May of last year was pretty rough for me. I moved in April 26th, start my new job on April 28th, and then I found like a lump right here on April 30th. And it was a rough time. And eventually I found out that this was nothing. And I was able to celebrate. I was able to say that cold comfort that people give you, at least you have your health. I was able to really appreciate that. At least I have my health. And I decided, look, you go into a Science of Mind church. You read these books. You go to these classes. Let's try and work this. let's try and put it into action. Practice what I preach. And so I decided to look for the positive in everything. And I often remember when Connie said once she was so low that all she could appreciate at the time was the color turquoise and blue, turquoise and purple together. Mm-hmm. And so I was at this job in Freddie Mac that I did not enjoy, and we moved to a home in Ashburn that I did not enjoy. But I tried to look for the positive. I had a boss who just believed in being on time. And I just was so not into that. I remember one of those deep thoughts by John Stanley or something on Saturday Night Live. He said, why are there right or wrong answers to math? Can't there just be impressions? Can't we all just be brothers? And that's how I feel about being on time. So I had that issue with her, but I decided to look for the positive. That jewelry looks really nice on her today. And her work ethic is really great. And I did what Harriet called a pink light treatment for her and just saw her embraced in pink light. And I didn't care for our home, but it was close to Starbucks. And what a blessing that was. I could walk to Starbucks. And so I started to pick out little things that were really good. And then I went to Eastern Conference in July, and everything just changed dramatically. I decided and was helped to realize how much greatness is in my life already, even though it didn't feel great at the time. But I was able to see the value deep within, and people at Eastern Conference in Simpsonwood helped me to see that. So when I came back, I decided I was going to love my life regardless, no matter where I lived or worked or who I dealt with. And I was able to find better friendships where I worked. And I was able to see better things in my boss. And before you know it, AOL sought me out for another job. And I said, no, I'm not going back. And they pursued me, and I'm there now, and I absolutely love it. It is a perfect match. I don't think it could get any better. It's that good. And I've just found out that after the first of the year, they're going to turn me into a manager. life is good there. And I also found that since we moved into the other house, we were able to buy another home, and something we never would have done if we had stayed at our other place. So God had a plan. And I love this house far more than I love the other one. And I love this job far more than I love the other one. And I loved my way through that. I decided that I love my life no matter what. I wouldn't trade places with anybody. Even when it's bad, it's good.
Yeah.
And that is a gift. So opportunities have come up. Matches have been clicking into place. And, of course, there's still room for improvement, but I love my life right now. I like it so much better than I did before, and I thank this community for helping me to see that and to be able to focus on that for a month. It's really, really good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I wish I can expound the way my friend can expound, but I have to read, because I find that my focus is more intense when I look at the words that I have thought about over the last month. So I'm going to read, and please bear with me. If you ever hear "you," I can quickly turn it into an "I," because it's my living and loving experience of life. And you can put "I" wherever it's necessary for yourself. Okay, loving life. You know, last 2 weeks, Connie started her talk with "there is a spirit bubbling inside of me." And that's exactly how I feel that life is. Life is that spirit that is bubbling inside of me, that gives credence to what I am and the experience that I am now. So I call this bubbling spirit life. I call it freedom. I call it love. It's the flow of my life. It is joy. It is potential. It is all possibility. It is holiness. And holiness could be wholiness. Because of the fact that it's just all one. It's divine. It's just so holy. It's goodness. It's what I call God within me. And we can go on, we can put different words to what we call this bubbling spirit within me. And I ask the question, so why am I here? Why am I living life right now? And I came up with to choose, to express love, to express joy, to express any one of these qualities that I have mentioned above. I am here to experience what these qualities called life is. And so I asked myself another question. So if my experience as a human on this earth is to choose life, then it means that I have concluded that life has been there all the time. Life has been ever existing. And that's the reason why I came into this world. I was introduced to this world through birth. So I can choose something that has been always existing. And life with its many qualities has always existed. My life is eternal. Life existed even before the connection of my parents' sperm and embryo, or embryo as the Americans say. Birth introduced me to my life, to the life that is. And so that means that life really is ageless. It's endless. It has no beginning. It has no end. There are no fragments to this life. It is the one and the same. It can never change. Life must always be constant. However, what I do with life changes. And this is what gives the illusion of separateness. It must remain constant because it is unconditional. It is there for me regardless. This is the reason I can choose, and I can choose, and I can choose again, and I can choose again. Because when I come back to the choice, it is always available for me to choose from that oneness, which is called life. So as I rearrange my life through my thoughts, and by me having a clearer and clearer picture, a clearer consciousness of who I am, the one constant, which is life, which is God, which is harmony, which is peace, which is love, is always there, always available to rearrange my life in harmony, in alignment with who and what I want to be. And we all know that we are joy, we are truth, we are peace, we are whatever qualities we find That's who we are. We are inherently that wonderful goodness, that wonderful well-beingness. That's what I call my life. It is ever patient. Life is ever patient. It is forever given. It's always given. Because it's always available, it's always there, it's always given. And that's all it knows to do. It has nothing else. It knows nothing else. If it knew anything else, if it knew to make decisions, if it knew to do whatever, then we would get into another sort of experience called duality. And that's where you have two forces, two powers. You have judgment, you have all this stuff. And life has no judgments, none whatsoever. So how I comprehend and use this constant, which is life, brings out the uniqueness that I call Gail, and that other people see me as Gail. So I just have a little list of some of the things that I do to encourage me in loving life. Loving life for me means finding the gifts, finding the lessons, and delighting in the moment each of these offer. We have gifts. Sometimes we get into things and it's like, wow, what a beautiful gift. Like Felissa, you know, she went through so many experiences, but she never dunged it and said, oh, wow, woe is me. She found the lesson in it. She found the gift in what her experiences were and moved on. She delighted in the moments that it offered. I experienced non-alignment with joy. Sometimes some people call it suffering. Some people call it disappointment. And still, I am gentle with myself. I can go through these processes, but yet I know to be living life fully, I have to go through it and be gentle. Because this is the only person, the only experience, the only human form that could ever be expressed, that life could ever express through. So I have to be gentle with myself. I am connected. And connection for me means that emotional link with someone, with something. And the emotional link actually is what causes like a dissolving. You connect with someone and that dissolves. And it's like interpreted as love in some cases. You hold a tree, you hug a tree, and something dissolves and know that, hey, there is an experience. This is a goodness between the two things. And it's like, it's love. It's that connection. And then I surrender. I surrender to life. Loving life happens when I surrender to my experiences. Holding on and having mind control keeps me stagnated. It hinders my joyful experience. I want to be 100% of what I'm doing, whether it be dancing, and I love to dance, whether it be singing, talking, whatever, you know, I want to experience that. I want to experience just knowing that in every aspect of my life, and for, you know, there are areas where we just, you know, open ourselves and allow ourselves to enjoy. I was going to go one place, but I won't. Do not try to fit into another person's mold. And this is where I feel myself so genuine, because I have to be me. I see other people. I admire them. I wish that I could do some of the things that they do. But that's their experience. What presents to me, what I pull from life, is my experience. And it's only when I can experience myself fully that I can experience another and know the difference in terms of not fitting into different molds. Because it really confuses me, confuses us. It restricts and it constricts us. This is where we have like digestive illnesses, because there's so much constriction, because it's not flowing the way we need life to flow for us. And I am being myself, living for myself. By living for myself, then I can live for another. finding my own space and expanding it to the best of my ability. Be who I am. And then I kind of went into listening to music, you know, getting into the feel of dancing, not only tapping your feet, but feeling your hips moving, you know. Getting into the flow of the hips. And being in flow with all things, accepting what is without judgment. Accepting what is without judgment. That is life. Do you mind if I read from the flowchart? I just have one quick flowchart to read. It's my favorite. I have this written, hung in my bedroom, so I can look at it at every moment. It's called Flow, and it was written by Rita and Noel McGuinness. I think these were he was a minister at a religious science church. It says, flow. Be as water is, without friction. Flow around the edges of those within your path. Surround within your ever-moving depths those who come to rest there. Enfold them, while never for a moment holding on. Accept whatever distance others are moved within your flow. Be with them gently, as far as they allow you and your strength to take them, and fill them with your own being, the remaining space when they are left behind. When dropping down life's rapids, froth and bubble into fragments if you must, knowing that the one of you, now many, will still as many times be one again. And when you've gone as far as you can go, quietly await your next beginning. Thank you.
That was beautiful. I thought a lot about, I really enjoy my life. I love my life. And so I thought about all the things about it that I enjoy and where would be a good place to start, you know. It's almost an impossible thing to come up with a good place to start, just talking about my life. And but what I started thinking about and meditating about is you know, what's behind this, this almost continuous expanse of pleasure and enjoyment on life. And I, one of the meditation sessions that I had, I shared with Grace the other night, and I was thinking, and some of Wordsworth's words just kind of wafted into my mind. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er hill and vale, and all at once I chanced to see a crowd, a host of golden daffodils. And it goes on to describe the infinite run of these daffodils as they dance and move into infinity, further than the twinkling stars of space. And the depth of this field of daffodils is overwhelming if you get lost into it. And so I saw that as sort of life, you know. It's just, and so I was telling this to Grayson, and she says, well, what about the pain? We wrestle with this a lot. I mean, we science mind people. I've seen ministers get a hard question that has to do with pain or some other little thing that happens in life that seems to not be really part of the, you know, if you understand why I'm saying it, it happens. And so what about pain? And we do wrestle with it. And sometimes it's a little bit difficult to answer. And sometimes things kind of cloud the view of the daffodils. And I was reminded of once when Jesus gets a question like this from his disciples, they says they encountered a blind man. And this is not a child. This is a man who's been blind from birth. And the disciple says, Master, who sinned that this man was born blind? Was it him? Or was it his parents? Now, I'm stepping aside here just a little bit, because this, you know, the book, it comes out of the book of John, which is one of those that just barely made it into the Bible because it has too much metaphysical stuff in it. And so there's a little implication there that the man who was born blind could have sinned himself. When would he have done that? We won't go there into that. But it is an interesting question. That there were thoughts there about that. But anyway, Jesus says, neither. He's blind so that we can have a demonstration. So that the goodness and the works of God can be made manifest. And of course, he proceeded to do a miracle there. But it's the same kind of question that we ask that when we encounter the pain and the issues of it, and we can't see the daffodils when it happens, and it's a little difficult. We explain it, and you know you get down to the floor, it all works out, it's all one. We get into it, we get good explanations of it, and they don't stick. They don't stick. It's hard to reproduce that explanation on demand when the next pile of fertilizer hits the ventilator. It's just difficult to remember them. And it's like there was an article in it. It's either this month or last month's Science of Mind magazine about a lady who's, I mean, it was a wonderful article on remembering who she is. Mm-hmm. And of course, this is the bottom line of everything, of remembering who we are and what we are. Mm-hmm. And she talks about the difficulty and the experiences with it. And then she has this moment of absolute clarity, and she goes home and it's gone. She's lost that moment of clarity. She's lost the view of the daffodils. And it's kind of, there's a theological term called hypostatic union. I mean, it's one of those goofy things that theologians say to each other, I think, sort of like doctors, you know. And what it does, what it explains when you read it, it's an attempt to explain, this is a Christian perspective, it's an attempt to explain how the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit can be one. In other words, it's an attempt to justify monotheism with a Trinitarian concept. Mm-hmm. And so they sort of draw it like this Boolean thing, you know, and when they picture it, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit are in stasis. They're all in the same bubble. And you could draw lines around it to demonstrate that they're there, but then the lines really aren't there. It's kind of like the brain, the human brain. You know, we got this part over here that thinks about this kind of thing, and this part over here that moves arms and legs. You cut one of those out, the brain is dead. There are no real lines in there, mm-hmm. but they do seem to be functional areas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can remember thinking, oh, this whole hypostatic union stuff is just, you know, one of those attempts to, but it works for all of us. It works for the one that we all are. And, you know, we're in there, and you could draw lines around us, but then you can take the lines away and it just looks like this one solid thing, but we're still there. It's just like that section of the brain that's here. We're all here to enjoy the daffodils. Mm-hmm. And the poet, you know, as he goes on in the last verse of the poem, he said, sometimes when I'm in a pensive mood, I remember the daffodils. You know, and he's one with the daffodils. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when you forget the explanation, it's easiest just to fall back on no explanation at all and mm-hmm. just accept where we are and enjoying life. That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. I think I've about said it all that I had prepared, but it was wonderful. It just sort of segues right over, and I was listening to her boy there, and just the flow just flows right into the things that I wanted to say, from specific things of These are absolute instances of demonstration that fill my life with joy. Yeah. To a little bit of explanation about why it's happening and how the flow is. Over to how we sometimes wrestle to hang on to it. Mm-hmm. But it's there. And being here helps, you know. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you.